Welcome to Writers on Writing. I'm your host, Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm here every Wednesday evening from 6:30 to 7 with authors, editors, agents, poets, those connected with the art or business of writing. Tonight my guest is Keith Snyder, author of Coffin's Got the Dead Guy on the Inside. As well as being a writer, Keith is an award-winning multimedia and print designer. Later in the show, we'll play music from his CD. He co-produced and scored Session 52, a short film which was selected for screening at the New Orleans Film Festival and Bombay International Film Festival. This year he completed One is for the Gun, a 9.5-minute film which he co-wrote, produced, and directed. He recently moved from California, where he'd been a lifelong resident, to Brooklyn, New York, with his wife, operatic mezzo-soprano Kathleen Haverson. He's at work on his third Jason Keltner mystery. The book he's here to talk about tonight is Coffin's Got the Dead Guy on the Inside, published by Walker. It's good to see you again,
well, thank
Keith.
Thank you. It's nice to see you.
The main character of Coffin's Got the Dead Guy on the Inside, Jason Keltner, is an appealing, mostly unemployed musician who lives in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with him?
Well, it wasn't that much of a stretch. Most of the people that I hang out with and most of my friends are very clever, very literate, very intelligent, very broke people. So, artistic people. And I didn't really set out to set a book in an unusual setting like that. And I didn't, in fact, realize it was an unusual setting when I started writing it. I just wanted to write about the kinds of people that I liked and hung out with.
Mm-hmm.
And as my sister says, it's just like hanging out with your obnoxious friends.
Your book?
Yes.
Will you talk about the theme of your work a bit and how you came to write a mystery?
Theme in which sense? In the theme in the sense of the genre? I've always written, ever since I was a kid, but it wasn't until my sister loaned me some of Robert Parker's books mm-hmm. that I thought maybe crime fiction would be a good way to go. I really admire a lot of his stuff. Early Autumn and Looking for Rachel Wallace are two of my favorite novels, let alone crime novels. So that's really what started it.
You've received some very nice reviews mm-hmm. in Publishers Weekly and Library Journal. Two of, I guess, the most important publications you could have a review in,
yes.
really. How do reviews affect you?
Well, if the review is good, I think, well, that's nice. Maybe I'll sell a few more books. And if the review is not good, then I dismiss the reviewer as ignorant.
So you read reviews, obviously.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So if a review is not good, does it? Are you able to just...
Oh, I'm annoyed for a few hours, and after that I forget
about it. You just go on.
I mean, and the good reviews don't really affect me that much either. They're really nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to read something that's very complimentary about one's
work.
Oh,
yeah.
But it really doesn't have any sort of lasting effect. Mm.
So when you're writing, you're not sitting there going, well, that was a good review. I better do better next time and get a really great review. And
no,
then
okay. No. I give myself enough of a challenge without requiring anything from anyone else.
So. What about sales? Do you think, how much do reviews affect sales?
I don't know. The book has been out for such a short time that it's impossible to tell how it's doing yet.
Mm-hmm.
There was an LA Times review, as a matter of fact, just this Sunday that was very good. And I had a couple people at a signing that I did in Venice say that they were there because of the review. So obviously they have some effect, but I don't know how to quantify
mm-hmm.
exactly how much effect.
Right. It's so hard to get reviewed by I'm sure Publishers Weekly and, mm-hmm. and all of those magazines, but I know the LA Times gets something like 300 books a week.
Oh, they must get a ton.
Yeah.
So it's really flattering.
It's really flattering.
Yes.
Before we go on, why don't you read a page or two?
Okay.
And perhaps right after that, we will play a bit from your CD.
Great. Okay, this is just page 1, chapter 1, and page 2, chapter 1. The heat and smog would hit in early morning and cling to the floor of the San Gabriel Valley like a gritty blanket. Evenings, the blanket lifted a little, and a dirty, stifling warmth filtered in to supplant the shattering heat. Pasadena was almost unbearable in the summer. Pretty bungalows and tree-lined avenues didn't matter. Jason Keltner was sitting at a table in a bright, untrafficked alley on a Thursday afternoon, reading Cosmopolitan, sipping weird hibiscus iced tea, and half-listening to the Neil Young cassette the espresso bar counterperson was playing, when Norton Platt came around the far corner and walked toward him. Platt was wearing faded jeans with an old brown belt and new sneakers, and his long brown hair was down, loose. His expression was, as Jason remembered it, vaguely amused, as though God tried out his new comedy material by beaming it directly into Platt's brain. Jason was wearing his only good shirt, white linen with metal rims on the buttons, with the sleeves rolled halfway up his forearms. His hair wasn't quite as long as Platt's, and it was darker. He had it back in a soft black ponytail band. He lowered his Cosmo a little, raised one eyebrow, and said, "Aha! A tricky case of international intrigue has you stymied. You have come to beg for my insight." Jason hadn't seen Platt in a long time and hadn't expected to see him at the E-bar. Platt pulled out the other chair, sat down, and said, "What's the difference between a musician and a savings bond?" Jason said, "A savings bond eventually matures and earns money. What do you call a musician without a girlfriend?" "Homeless." "What did the drummer get on his IQ test?" "Drool." "Did you hear about the drummer who locked his keys in the car?" "They had to break the glass to get the guitarist out." Platt thought for a moment. "You know the difference between a cello and a coffin." "Yeah, I know that one." "I have a job for you if you're interested." "What kind of job?" "Hold on, let me get some coffee." Platt got up and went inside. Jason picked up his magazine and read an article about how to make men better in bed. Apparently, some of the dim oafs could be taught to sign simple words and not drool on the mattress. Platt came back with a glass of iced coffee, sat down, and said, "You never struck me as a Cosmo girl." "Man should have an open mind," Jason said. "I don't read this magazine, and it occurred to me that I had no good reason not to." Platt pursed his lips as though that made sense. "So?" "Now I have a good reason." The perfumed air that puffed out as he closed the magazine smelled like a dump site for hazardous orchids. "What's this job?"
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you've just tuned in, that was Keith Snyder reading from his latest mystery, Coffin's Got the Dead Guy on the Inside. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett on 88.9 FM. Before we get back to Keith, we're going to play a bit from his CD. Do you want to tell our listeners a bit what they're going to be hearing?
This is actually a demo that there's no deal for this thing yet, but we're sending it out and trying to get some interest. My wife is an opera singer, as you mentioned before, and this is some music that I've written for her and recorded in my little, you know, basement studio.
Excellent. Wonderful.
Thank you. Isn't she great?
Yeah, she's great. And it's just, as I was saying, that all of you couldn't hear, but while, I mean, you think of opera singers and you think of, you know, something very classical.
Marriage of Figaro and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you did that in your basement.
It was recorded, actually, that one was recorded, the vocal, in my mother's living room. And the rest of it was all composed and mixed and all that in my basement. Yeah.
So you're a writer, composer, multimedia artist, and print designer.
Yep.
How do you choreograph your life?
I wake up in the morning and see what has me most panicked. And then I take care of that.
So is that truly how you...
No, not really. A lot of planning, really a lot of determination, a lot of deciding to finish things, even when it doesn't look as though that's reasonable. Yeah.
Interesting. How do you like living in Brooklyn since you moved there? Is it a creative place for you?
Honestly, I really miss the West Coast. We are there for Kathleen's career. That's my wife that you just heard singing. And New York is a good place for an opera singer to be, but we're both looking forward to sometime being able to return home.
Yeah. When do you think that sometime will be?
Oh, well, as soon as she gets famous.
Are you going to move Jason, your main character, to the East Coast now that you're there? Now that you're there, or will he remain in Pasadena?
I think he's going to remain on the West. In fact, in the third book, they move out of Pasadena. They move to Venice, which is where I lived for a while. But there's also going to be some bi-coastal stuff. In the third book, which isn't out yet, but which will be out about this time next year, which has no title yet, there was going to be a trip to New York anyway before we really thought about moving. But I was going to kind of gloss it over. But now that I'm actually living there, I've got all the details and the setting and all that to make use of, so I've got the characters going there. And I think there'll be some bouncing back and forth thereafter.
Well, let's talk about your writing process. All writers love to hear how other writers work. Do you know what's going to happen in your story before you begin writing?
I have some ideas before I begin writing, but usually what I have to start with is just a couple of characters together that I want to see interacting. In Coffin's Got the Dead Guy on the Inside, I wanted to take Jason, who's my main character, and Paul, who was a kind of a shifty character from Show Control. And the two of them were friends at the beginning
of Show
Control.
Your first book.
Yes, the first book in the series. And put them together in close contact and kind of rattle them against each other and see what happens. So that's kind of the way I tend to do things. I'll decide what kind of people I want together and what kind of feeling I want from the book, put them together, write a few chapters, see what the conflict becomes, and then back up and make a plot out of that conflict. And I kind of leapfrog my way through books as I'm writing this way anyway. I'll kind of write myself into a corner, and then I'll go, why did he do that? And I sit in the corner, banging my head against the wall, why did he do that? I don't know why he did that. And I've kind of come up with a method of dealing with this, which is to take out a pad of paper, go sit someplace away from home, I hate working at home, and write a question across the top that says, why did he do that? Whatever it is. And I'll start going down the page making bullet answers to this. Because he's an idiot. Because he's a jerk. Because he had a bad day. Because he's quitting coffee. And by the time I've gone down the list, five or six items, I've run out of obvious answers, and I'm starting to have to actually come up with things that are a little more creative and complicated. And by the time I've gotten down to the bottom of the page, which sometimes will take a few days, I've got something that I can circle and go, aha, that's the thing I want to use. I haven't quite seen this before. It feels right for the book. It feels right for the characters, and then I can move on and write myself into another corner.
So you said that you don't like to work at home. Actually, you said you hate working at home.
Yes.
And you work elsewhere. Where do you go?
Well, as cliche as it is, I like coffee houses. I like just getting away from anything that reminds me of my day-to-day life. While I was in Southern California and had a car, I would just get in the car sometimes and just take off in some random direction and find myself somewhere that had nothing to do with me, where I could just relax, let my brain simmer down a little bit, and start thinking. One of the favorite places that I ended up was a place called the Amargosa Hotel and Opera House, which actually is in Coffin's Got the Dead Guy, on the Inside, which is a hotel in a place called Death Valley Junction. And there is nothing else in Death Valley Junction but this hotel. And there's this wonderful auditorium there called the Amargosa Opera House, which is run by a 70-something-year-old woman named Marta Beckett, who puts shows on every year. And people come from all over the world to Death Valley to watch these shows. So I just stumbled into this place, and it became one of my favorite places to write because the rooms have a bed, a table, an air conditioner, and that's it. There's no telephone. There's no television.
No distractions.
No distractions. And you have to drive 25 miles to get something to eat. So you have to sit there and write or look at the dirt. There's really nothing else to do. So I really enjoyed that a lot. I got a lot of productive time out of that.
Do you tend to write every day when you're into a book?
When I can, I do. As you said, I've got a lot going on. Right now, I'm on deadline to get the third book delivered. So I will be writing every day as soon as I'm back from this book tour. I am not a particularly disciplined writer. I don't jump up, sharpen three pencils, place them perpendicular to the counter edge, make myself one slice of dry toast, write 500 words, and take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
That's
do
not
that.
You.
No, I go 4 weeks without writing anything and go, I haven't written anything! And then I jump in the car and go off in some random direction and write 10,000 words or 20, or, you know, whatever it is.
Who have you found is the audience for your book? Who reads your book?
So far, the audience has been mostly the traditional mystery audience, which is known to the publishing industry as women in their 30s and up.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to reach a different audience, a younger audience, and a broker audience, like musicians, because the main characters are musicians.
Mm-hmm.
But and there will be paperbacks of all three of these books out starting next year.
That's
so we're
wonderful.
Hoping that'll expand the audience a bit. We'll see.
Did you intend to write a series?
Yes.
Yeah.
I never really thought about it. I thought, well...
Why?
Yeah. Why not write a series?
So were you a mystery reader before you started your book, the first one?
Not a voracious one. I've always been a reader, but until... As I said, my sister gave me a bunch of Robert Parker's books. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really read in crime fiction or mysteries. So I still read probably mostly outside of the genre, but since getting published, I've been buying a lot of other authors' books because I've been meeting the authors, so I've been reading a lot more within the genre.
How about getting an agent? How did that happen for you?
I don't have an agent.
Oh, really? Did you market your book yourself?
Yes, I still don't have an agent, which is not it's not a philosophical stand. I just don't have one yet. The first book I sold, I finished my manuscript, and I learned that the American Booksellers Association show was going to be taking place in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked around a bunch of the writers that I knew, both online and in the real world, and I said, well, the ABA show is coming up. I have a finished manuscript. Should I go there? Is this good for an author to do? And everybody said, no, this is not the place for an author. This is for distributors and booksellers. They're doing business. They don't want to talk to authors. And I said, okay, I'm going. So I volunteered.
There won't be any other authors there.
Right. I'll be the only jerk who decided to show up and bother people. So I volunteered at a booth. The public is not invited to the ABA. So I volunteered at a booth that was offering cassettes that taught you how to use WordPerfect and got in that way by volunteering at the booth. And once I was there, I got a show program, circled anything that said mystery, and I went from booth to booth to booth to booth in the trade show saying, hi, I'm an author. Is there an editor here I can annoy? And everybody said, yeah, come on in. What's your book about? You know, sometimes I had to wait to talk to somebody, which was fine with me. I ended up pitching to editors-in-chief this way. So at the end of the show, nobody wanted to take my manuscripts because it was a pain to cart them around. But by the end of the show, I had 12, I think it was 12, requests to be mailed partial or full manuscripts. And within about 6 months after that, I had 11 rejections and a contract offer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's different.
Yes.
But that's great, you know, because everyone always wonders what the rule is, and there aren't really,
well, not really
hard and fast rules. I mean, there's certain ways, more traditional ways people find success, but...
I think it's a lot of it is just what you're comfortable with, and I'm comfortable going off on my own and doing stupid things.
When you're in the thick of a book, working just feverishly into it, what do you read?
Oh, yeah.
What
I'll
do
anything that'll keep me away from writing. I even clean. It's amazing. What do I read? I read just about anything that looks as though it might hold my interest. I mean, the things that I have read that I already know I like are, I adore P.G. Woodhouse. I just think he's the funniest person ever to write in English. I have been going through a Ross McDonald phase lately, and just what an amazing writer. I'll just sit there rereading some of his paragraphs going, jeez, God, I'm just giving up now. Who else have I been reading lately? I really liked a book about a year and a half, 2 years ago, called The Caveman's Valentine by George Dawes Green, which was sort of a mystery, but told with a really unusual, interesting character and a different kind of plot. I liked that a lot. Off the top of my head, that's about it.
You've been compared to Donald Westlake.
Yep.
Is that one of your...
I've read a lot of Westlake, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't set out to be compared to him, but that seems to be what's beginning to stick.
And one of the reviews I read of your book.
Several of them have made that comment, yeah.
That's interesting.
I'll take it.
Yeah, what a compliment. What writers have had a special impact on you, or people, as a writer? Have you had teachers? Did you have teachers in school, or was it since
I think
then?
Mostly it was just that my mom always encouraged her kids to be creative. You know, we had art supplies around, and we were encouraged to write. We were encouraged to play music. We were encouraged to just do stuff. I think that's really about it. That's all you really need.
Revising. Do you do a lot of it? Do you go through drafts and drafts, or do you clean up your stuff as you go along, and by the end of it, you...
By the end of it, I'm about 80% there, because I use a word processor, and it's so easy to mix things around and change them. The danger of that is that I end up polishing things that by the time I get to the end, I realize the entire segment has to go anyway. Mm-hmm. So the whole description of the ocean and the... You know, the lovely silhouette of the gulls against the fiery lemon-colored sun. That doesn't matter anymore because mm-hmm. that entire scene just goes. Mm-hmm. So there is some time wasted that way, but it's still how I work.
Do you have little quirks in terms of, you know, I know writers who have special talismans or other sorts of things where they're very organized and have a file for titles, a file of first lines, a file of plots. Do any of that?
Really, the only kind of totem that I rely on. Everybody has little ones. Like, I have to have the right kind of pad, and I have to have this size pad with the green paper, and I can't use a blue pen because nobody could be creative with a blue pen. Mm-hmm. I have to have a black pen. Ballpoint? Are you kidding? It has to be a roller point. That stuff aside, the real thing is just getting away and getting out of town, mm-hmm. which is a real help to me, which is entirely psychological. And mm-hmm. obviously, there's nothing that's superior about the Earth's magnetic field for creativity in that place. Right. I just feel like... I feel better when I do it.
Hmm. Well, I was just talking with someone about this today. Motels, inns, places mm-hmm. without distractions, unless, of course, TV is one of your distractions,
right.
In which case, don't go somewhere like
work.
That. But sometimes that can do wonders,
yes.
Just getting you to pour it out.
Yeah, and not just the lack of distractions, but the lack of familiarity, the lack of the chance of distractions. There's nobody here asking anything of you, mm-hmm. and nobody is going to. There's no tension about whether the phone's going to ring, because it's not.
Mm-hmm. How is it writing about California from New York? Is it different than writing about California when you lived in Venice?
Well, mostly when I was in California, I did California from memory anyway. I didn't go walk outside and look at the street and mm-hmm. then go back in and write about it. I was sitting inside writing about the street, so I'm still just doing that. I'm wondering whether there's a finite number of images that I have to draw on here and whether I'm going to run dry, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, I'll have to come back.
Your wife will be famous and you'll be back.
That's
it'll
right.
Be time, the
everything
right time.
Will be perfect.
We're going to end a little early so we can play another track from your CD.
Okay.
But before we go, any advice for writers listening?
Well, I have a kind of a stock answer whenever that question is there any advice to mystery writers who are listening? And that advice is stop reading mysteries and go read some other things. Keep reading them for pleasure. Stop reading them to learn. You get it. You already know. You understand that it's a puzzle, that there are red herrings, that there are clues, that you have to have, you know, your amateur detective who has a sidekick or whatever the heck it is that you're trying to do. You get it. So that isn't anything you need to work on anymore. Work on being a good writer, regardless of genre. And the way I think to do that is to read things that you don't usually read, because that's when you notice things you wouldn't usually notice.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks. Anything we should know about the music we're about to hear?
Well, I gave you the choice of a slow romantic one or a fast upbeat one, and you chose a slow romantic one.
Of course I did.
So this is a slow romantic piece of music.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks so much. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you'd like to reach me, email me at bdemarcob@aol.com. Thanks for listening, and get to work. Remember, it's all about writing like there's no tomorrow.